life, I plan not to be on this corner. I still want to see California, but this is my world.
Welcome to the It's Your World podcast here on Team Media. For more information about the team, visit our website, www.theteam.media, or on social media, Facebook and Instagram, at The Team LLC. Twitter, I'm still working it out, y'all, but hopefully Twitter will be back up really, really soon. We're also available on your favorite podcasting outlet, including Stitcher, Spotify, Google. Honestly, I can't even keep up. We're on a favorite outlet near you. For this particular episode, I'm deciding to do a very special hour-long episode dedicated to the brothers, to the black men, to the fathers, even to those of you with no kids. In light of everything that has been happening over this year, the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, the killing of Breonna Taylor, the killing of George Floyd, the social unrest that has, you know, pretty much been sparked by it, and then everything else that has happened in between, up to and including the shooting of Jacob Blake, losing Kobe, losing Black Panther, the 180,000 plus lives that have been lost to the coronavirus. Yo, it's a lot. And as a brother, I just want to make sure my fellow brothers understand that you're not alone. You're not dealing with things in a silo. There's a whole community of other brothers that are feeling and experiencing what you're feeling and experiencing. So tonight I'm bringing on two really, really close friends of mine who I hope will offer a perspective and wisdom, one being my executive coach and another being a peer and a professional, and just someone that I trust really, 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 really well. So we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to jump into our first segment featuring my executive coach, and I'll give a brief introduction on who he is. So keep it tuned here. You should enjoy this hour. This is the It's Your World podcast here on Team Media.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, so what's a great way to spread awareness that driving high is illegal everywhere? A catchy song, of course.
You can run, or you can't drive high.
Reminder, don't drive high. If you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the It's Your World podcast here on Team Media. Joining me on the telephone is a man whose word and advice I trust greatly. He is an executive at a Fortune 100 firm, my personal executive coach, and someone I consider a friend. So please welcome Bill Nicholson, everyone.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. No problem at all. So Bill, 2020 has been very action-packed. You know, I don't want to discount the pain any American is feeling right now because we're all feeling touched and affected in different ways. But I wanted to call on you as a voice I trust because what I have seen and heard from many of my peers and my friends, particularly black men, is a sound of trauma. And it's something that we're all facing, again, in different degrees and maybe in different ways. So what I wanted to kind of talk to you about is, you know, some of your raw reactions, I guess, to everything that's happening. And then we can kind of dive into some of the conversations you've had and that you might suggest as Black men we should be having with each other and with our families. So how is everything affecting you that's happening right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I want to start by saying that we as Black men and as Black people have always been stigmatized. So we've been stigmatized for many years. And it started back with Christoph Attucks. Remember, he was the Black man that was killed in the 1770 Boston Massacre. And that started a revolution back then. And so that stigma kind of started many, many, many years ago and stayed with us over years. And what's happened is that it's evolved. And remember, the next major event that I remember was the Rodney King beating and how stigmatized people were from that, right? And so what we have is we have a layering on of how Black men, how Blacks have been treated over the years. And so now we've got to the point to where that people are traumatized. And one of the main reasons is that there's more ways to get that information out there a lot more quicker and to the mass. And if you think about how society has evolved, and I'm talking about how society has evolved as far as being able to get messages, and it goes, and I kind of credit the hip-hop movement with this.
Okay.
And here's why. Remember when they started out, they were selling CDs out the back of their...
The trunk. Yeah.
But that's exactly right. But they were reaching masses even then.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so started creating these pathways from a communication standpoint. And so now... when something happens, it's not a stigma anymore. It's trauma. People are seeing it for what it really is.
I was just going to ask, can we talk a little bit about that trauma? Because men are sometimes given this stigma that we're not good with words, that we use very basic language sometimes to try to describe complex thought and feeling. And one of the things that I spy is that I don't know that men do a good job of identifying when they may be feeling trauma. So can you talk a little bit about what that looks like? I want to help people be able to identify within themselves if they may be experiencing trauma.
And that's a really good point. And so men in particular, and Black men specifically, we have the condition to hear a certain mammal, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have a condition to deal with pain, to take orders, to suck it up, to our machismo, to be our signature. And the more we practice it, the better we are with it. And so that's become our identity. And I always say one thing, if you want to be a better man, simply be a better person. And what I mean by that is that means that you need to have empathy. We need to be able to be in touch with our feelings. We need to be able to be in touch with the things that are going on around us from an emotional standpoint. And so what's happening with the trauma that's hidden with us, we feel it and we're processing it, but we really don't, all the times we don't know how to explain it because we've been conditioned to just to be silent and to be the strong silent type and kind of move forward in that regard. Now we have more voices that are at least saying, well, you know what, enough is enough, and this is why. And that's the right direction for getting past that barrier that we've had as men because we've been conditioned to be that way.
I feel like it's hard to look at everything happening. And I know there is a concerted effort by a lot of people to be mindful of what they digest in terms of news, in terms of content. There's just so much out there. So you don't even really have to be a person that reacts to everything, but it is hard to live through this time and not have strong feelings about something. So I guess my concern is what are healthy expressions of those thoughts and feelings and concerns, because you got to talk to someone, and that's what I want to kind of help spur through this episode as well.
Right. And so I feel that the most important thing for us as Black people and Black men in particular is to be understood. If you think about a lot of times when we hear particularly Black men speak or talk, and I'm not talking about in a corporate setting, I'm talking about when we're talking to each other, when we're trying to get a point across, we're often misunderstood and therefore misinterpreted. And so that forces us to be a little bit more reluctant about saying certain things because we're misunderstood. And as you know, we live in two different worlds. We have our own language with our peers, but we have a different language that we have to live, that we have to deal with when we're in a corporate environment, when we're in a work environment.
Right.
And so the translation of things gets really skewed a lot of times. Black men get the moniker of being angry. If you say one word or if your tone is wrong, then you're labeled as being angry.
Or aggressive or overly aggressive for whatever reason.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so subconsciously, we take that in and we go, okay, then I'm just either not going to deal with it or it's just going to make me more angry. And so our emotions get shifted in these different directions as opposed to what we're really feeling about things.
So let me take a couple of steps back, because we touched a little bit at the very beginning about, you know, the sum total of everything happening. You know, I've seen so much in my 41 years, and, you know, being from the East Coast, you know, police shootings, police killings are not anything new. Miscarriages of justice at the hands of law enforcement, I've seen it. But there was something about the George Floyd murder that resonated with me. And the more I heard from my peers, it resonated with a lot of Black men in particular. Like, it was a moment that really shook us as a culture, as a people, and as humans. And so I want to kind of go back and kind of just talk about, you know, as someone who's seen a lot, I know it affected you as well. Do you mind sharing what some of your thoughts were at that moment, right after that murder, and then moving forward to what has happened even since?
The first thought that came to my mind is that this is the same cavalier approach that we see in so many other segments of dealing with racism. And now we've taken it to the extreme, to murder. To murder, to blatant murder, knowing you're being watched, knowing you're being looked at, knowing you're being filmed, and you don't care. And I saw the look on the officer's face when he was doing it. He just didn't care. You know, and I go back to what I alluded to a little bit earlier is that, you know, we learn to stuff a lot of different things, whether it's in our personal lives or in our professional lives. But that moment, it was just like, you know what, enough is enough. And so it's like when you blow up a balloon, a balloon can only get so full before it explodes. And that was my first, at that moment, going like, you know what, this is enough. And it just represents not just what happened with George Floyd, but represents what we feel about this happening over and over and over again. And it's been shown that it's not going to stop, or it hasn't stopped.
Is it fair to have optimism that things will ever change in this country, again, in your opinion, just because there is such a long lineage and history of this type of behavior? Should we expect that anything will ever be different?
I think that I'll answer that in two parts. One, I think it's fair to have optimism, but it's also fair to recognize that this country, as much as we may love America, and as much as we may love the good things about it, has some very strong racial patterns. And those are not going to go away. When you listen to people talk and their viewpoints on things, it's very skewed. Now, it's being magnified with a lot of things that are going on politically and in some other arenas. It's magnified a whole lot, but it's still very racist. And I'll say this real quickly. You know, I have a friend, and we were very close. And he was white and I was Black. And we're walking down the street and walking past these two teenagers and he elbowed one of them. I said, John, why did you do that? And he said, well, I'm tired of you, the N-words, doing such and such. And I said, well, what do you think I am? And so he said to me, but you're different. That
set
me off more so, because I said to him, I'm not, that pretty much ended our friendship, because you can't parse how you see things based upon what your perception is of people. And so until we can change people's perception, and some people's perception we would never be able to change, it's not going to change. And that's just the unfortunate part of it. And so the real question is how do you manage that? The other incident that really still blows me away was the Trayvon Martin. And so if that's not injustice, I don't know what injustice is anymore. Like, and it's hard for people to continue to be optimistic and to have hope when they continue to see these types of things happening. And the cavalier, and that's why I brought up, that's why I use the word cavalier and watching the George Floyd thing. It was the same thing with Trayvon Martin, the whole attitude of the guy that killed him.
As Black men, a part of us moving forward is just having to acknowledge that it'll never be in an ideal state, meaning we'll probably never as Americans sit around a campfire holding hands and kumbaya being at peace. But we still have to function in this world. We still have to raise families. We still have to work and be productive. And a part of the conversation personally, I feel Black men need to have is how do we move forward? Not forget, not ignore, not act like what has happened hasn't happened, because that's not healthy and I would never promote that. But how do we move forward? Like, what's the first step as a collective body and as individuals to start to put what's happening in some context and then to know how to move forward in a healthy, realistic manner?
I think it's doing the type of things that you're doing, Daniel, like getting people to talk about it and getting us as Black men to talk to each other. And as you well know, a lot of times when we get together, we'll talk about sports, we'll talk about other things, but we don't have what I call real talk. Women are pretty communicators. They talk about everything. They look for advice from each other. They share their feelings. Guys haven't been wired to do that. And so if you aren't wired to do something, then you are going to be wired to receive as well. And so it's kind of a two-way street. It's like we have to unblock those pathways so that we can receive more and we can understand more and we can help each other not to accept what's going on, but to understand better what's going on. And then when we face it, we can face it together as opposed to facing it individually. Because if you think about what happens to a lot of us is that we're so isolated that we don't have a peer that we could go by next door and like, hey, man, did you hear what I just heard? Are you feeling the same thing that I'm feeling? I decided that we don't have that option where other races do. And so we need those pathways in order to express that. You can only hold your breath for so long. So you need that chance to exhale and gather yourself so that you can have a reasonable conversation. That's not just one of anger, but it's one of, well, what do we need to do about this on a continuous basis and moving forward? Because it's going to happen again.
Once again, everyone, we're talking to my friend and mentor, Bill Nicholson. We're going to take a quick break and then come back with part two of this super important conversation. This is the It's Your World podcast here on Team Media.
Social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
America, your children have an amazing superpower. That's right. They can help save lives by simply washing their hands. Just 20 seconds of thorough hand washing after they've coughed or sneezed or been outside can help fight against the dastardly spread of germs. Armed with only soap and water and hands, your superhero can protect you, your family, and everyone out there in America land. Amazing. Find out more at coronavirus.gov. A message from the CDC and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. So we're going to pick up our conversation again with Bill Nicholson, my mentor and friend. And Bill, you were just saying before the break, it's going to happen again. And that's the sad thing, because right. I think if we're honest, we know it's going to happen again. And there's still so much anger unresolved from, I mean, even if you just take from this year, from every other time it's already happened and every other time it's already been reported on, and there's been no justice on any of this, to now it's like you said, you can only pump a balloon up so much before it just pops. And a lot of us are at that point where we're popping, or we have already popped. And
what,
like, how do you persist in such an environment?
And you know, and here's the irony in it, is that a lot of times I want to understand what's going on with us, and they could be empathetic, but they don't even experience the same things that Black men do. I mean, how many times have you gone out to dinner with your wife or your significant other, and the waiter or the waitress talks to her more than they talk to you? And so subconsciously, there is this, again, there's this stigma that surrounds Black males until you're accepted as not being like them. But then you still aren't accepted in your eyes because, you know, you aren't being accepted for who you are. You've been accepted that you aren't a threat to someone.
And I'm glad you said that, because that's exactly what it is. So a peer of mine and I were having a conversation last night about that very thing, about how when he goes out with his wife, like, everyone talks to his wife, but I guess they try to measure what his body language or facial expression is before they'll talk to him. And it speaks to that whole measurement the world takes of you as a Black man to kind of gauge, do you seem threatening or not? So I'm glad you said that word, because that's so prevalent. And I know me personally, I go through that.
I remember in the movie Men in Black, when Will Smith was trying to be a part of the secret society, and they had him out on the shooting range, and mean looking monster. I mean, he shot the little girl. He didn't shoot this big mean looking monster, and they asked him why. He said, well, the mean looking monster had a tear in his eye, and so he wasn't angry, he was in pain. Whereas the little girl, she had a gun in her purse.
Right. Right. I remember that.
Wow. Right. And so not only are we dealing with the stigmas that we talked about, we're dealing with the perception that people have about Black males in general.
Where in your purview, where does this perception really come from, though? What is this fear that America seems to have about Black men?
Initially, it was about control, right? Controlling slaves, controlling Black men. And then once the Black men and Black started to rebel, right, then that's where the fear came. And so, like, now that they can't enslave us anymore, the only thing left is for them to fear. And that's the only way to label us, is to be afraid of you, because that's a very strong word, fear.
Right. Fear in the attempt to control.
Right. And you know what's really interesting about that whole approach, that whole thinking of this, is that it starts with people being afraid of you until you prove them different. It's not the other way around, right? So even in a workplace, right, you go into a workplace and you feel alienated and you feel like you aren't being accepted, and it's because of this subconscious fear that people have of you as being a Black person until you prove them different. You prove that you can talk like they can. You prove that you can be productive. You prove that you can be competitive. You prove that you can add value to the organization. Until you prove those things, then their fear kind of dissipates to the point to where it's like, okay, we can deal with you, but you still never really get taken in. And if you do, it's because you aren't like the rest of the Black people.
And that's interesting. So having to measure up, regardless of what arena we're in, having to perform or show ourselves again as non-threatening or as being able to add some value to a situation and only being seen for that value and never the humanity. Wow. So, I mean, this has been a good conversation. I wish we had more time, because I have so much I want to ask you. And correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, you have kids, correct?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I have two sons that are grown, and I have a daughter who's 30.
What type of conversations have you had with your kids, or vice versa? What kind of things have they expressed or had conversations with you about in light of everything going on?
So the dialogue is pretty much the same that we're having now, is that we experienced that, and I've had conversations with them from when they were young about, you know, when you encounter police, or even when you encounter other people, we're from two different worlds, and you have to recognize that there's a difference between the two. And so they learned early on that there's a difference between the two, and they understand that, well, like, when I step into this world, this is what the protocol is. Like, the challenge is that when something goes kind of haywire, and it has, they've all experienced it just like I have, when something goes kind of haywire, they perceive it as just being wrong. They don't perceive it as being anything other than that. And now it's wrong because you see me as being Black. It's obvious. And so really what we're dealing with in a microcosm as far as families are concerned is exactly what we're dealing with as far as society is concerned, and what we're dealing with as far as work is concerned. It's just dressed in different attire.
It has to be... And the word I guess I want to use, jarring and upsetting, to see your kids now having to live through and react to some of the things as a country we were supposed to at least be on a road of reconciliation towards. It has to affect you in some way to even have to have those conversations with them.
Yeah. I think that the difference, though, is that they tend to be more... In unison about what's going on from a generational standpoint, because my kids span three different generations.
Okay.
And they seem to be more in unison as a whole from a generational standpoint. Whereas before my generation, we were so separated, so segregated, and we're still in an industrialized state where, you know, people worked in the mills, they worked nights, and so the mothers really ran the household, right? And so, and they had the voice, and they ran the household. Well, like now, you know, it's different. Is that we aren't industrialized, and we're really ingrained within society. And so, there's more interaction, and there's more unity across the different segments. And when I talk about segments, I'm talking about from a cultural standpoint between hip hop, basketball, the entertainment industry, Black learning skills. There's more camaraderie that's going on within those segments that see things exactly the same way. And so you see more of a unified voice that, well, like, it went, this is what's wrong. And that's why it feels like that there's this way that it just suddenly came at us.
Mm.
Right?
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
Everybody's eyes got open at the same time. They're getting hit with it at the same time. And so that balloon we talked about is not just an individual balloon that we have. It's a big balloon that we all are sucking the same oxygen,
That is so profound, and I'm glad you explained that, because that was one of the things, you know, even as a relatively younger guy, that struck me, how loud and how fast the movement was, and that it just seemed like the younger generation, particularly, they honed in. This doesn't look right. It doesn't feel right. It isn't right. And there was such a passion about speaking out about it. That was definitely one of the things that struck me and encouraged me a little bit, because I did wonder, them being so far removed from the civil rights movement, if we would ever see, you know, a subsequent movement from that time with as much passion as we are seeing today. So I won't take up too much more of your time. I'll end with this one question, because I know there are people that'll be listening to this episode and they've never heard of you, Bill. They don't know me, but they're probably just scouring the internet trying to find something that speaks to them and what they're feeling and their pain right now. If there's a young man, a young Black man listening to this episode, and they're just like, look, this, it's a lot. I'm hurt and I really don't know what to do. What are some final words you would impart to that young man in the view of everything happening right now?
We must continue to not only look at what's happening to us, but look at the things that we're doing to so that we could stay strong. And what I'm talking about is keeping a balance. And Dan, you heard me talk about this before, keeping a mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual balance, like a four-leg stool. So if we can keep a balance, then we just aren't dependent on what's happening to us from an emotional standpoint, because that can be overwhelming. And particularly, you know, we have lives now, you know, and people have jobs to get to, or they're trying to support their families along with everything else that's going on. And so try and keep that balance and to stay with the fight, right? Because it's not about where we start, it's going to be about where we finish. And we all have to do our part. And it may seem small, but if we do it together, then we're united. And then we can see some movement moving forward. And so don't feel like you're alone, because whether you're an OG like me or you're a young buck that's coming up, right, the pain never feels still the same.
And don't be afraid to reach out and just...
Don't be afraid to reach out.
Yeah, at the end of this show, I'll definitely make sure I make my contact information available, because I want to make sure every brother listening to this particular episode, you have someone to talk to and that you have some way to be heard. It's not always about giving people answers. Sometimes you just need to be heard, and you need to know that you're not the only person feeling what you're feeling. So,
yeah, and my contact information is on LinkedIn as well, under Willie Nicholson. So you can find me on LinkedIn, and Danny's right. I'm an executive coach of work at the executive level. But I'm just like everybody else. You know, I grew up just like everybody else. I'm no different than everybody else. And again, I said, if you want to be a better man, you have to be a better person. And so working towards that, the most important gift you can give someone is understand. If we understand each other, and we see each other, then we can help each other.
And that's a good way to end this particular segment. Bill, I could not thank you enough for taking this time to share with us and even me. I'll be a little selfish. I always look forward to the opportunity to share with you and to hear from you. So I'm sure our audience will appreciate it as well. Keep it tuned to everyone. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll come
why
right
can't
back.
We telegraph while riding a horse?
Son, there ain't no one to blame but Jeffro. He was riding old Betsy the Stallion, tip-tapping away at his telegraph, when blam, ran right into the side of the saloon.
Well, if Jeffro can't do it, neither should you. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council. Social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the It's Your World podcast here on Team Media. Joining me on the phone is a peer, someone I consider a friend, and someone who, you know, he's a parent. And like a lot of you listening, he probably has a lot of the same thoughts, feelings, and concerns that you have as Black men in this time. So I wanted to bring him on, because I think he's going to help a lot of you listening who are looking to be understood. You're going to connect with him. So please welcome to the show, Star Sahiri, everybody. Welcome to the show, Star.
Hey, appreciate it, Daniel. You could definitely consider me your friend.
Thank you, sir. I got one now. I'm doing all right.
Hey, look, we got to start somewhere, right?
Absolutely. So I'm just going to keep it real. You know, I was a little bit polite and cordial when I had my coach on, and you know, it's out of an abundance of respect that I have for him. But as age peers, I can kind of talk to you a certain way because you're gonna understand.
I'm telling you, we were just talking the other day too about how it started, you know, with Kobe, and it's just an ending with not ending, but you know, with it's bad. Black Panther now. It's 2020 has got it out for us.
I mean, Kobe was enough, and I'm not even a Lakers fan, but Kobe, I was already right with like kind of putting 2020 in a special box to be buried after Kobe died. Exactly. Especially given how it happened, like, you know, LeBron passing him on the scoring list and, you know, he's in Philly. It was like perfect, almost too perfect.
Exactly. Yeah.
But then you got the coronavirus and it's like, what in the world is this?
Yeah. And it kind of came out of nowhere, you know?
Man.
You guys out of the office and working from home. And
man,
I'm actually sharing office space with my kids. So they got their desk, I have my desk, and we're all just kind of huddled in the corner, you know, doing what we have to do on a daily basis.
They get tight with you sometimes, like you taking up too much space, daddy.
It's the other way around.
I hear that. And again, I was ready to take coronavirus, get another little special box, put it in that and bury it next to Kobe. Huh. And then all this social unrest broke out and I'm just like, I'm running out of sides to turn to. Like, what in the world is going on here?
It's not new. I mean, but it's coming to the forefront now.
Right. And we're going to touch on that in one moment. I don't even want to talk about Black Panther. That still hurts. It's still too fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the sum total is this has been a crazy year. And, you know, one of the things that I've kind of seen, and you probably have seen it as well on social media or even because both of us are leaders of people, you hear it from, you know, your teams and your colleagues. It's just a lot of trauma, especially amongst Black men. And this is a time where I feel like Black men need to be connected and need to talk and need to just share in what they're feeling. And a part of that is just being real about what we feel. So that's where I kind of want to start with you, Star. George Floyd was supposed to be the last such incident, at least for some time.
Exactly.
And we don't go but a couple of months and we got Jacob Blake. I mean, how did you feel when you first heard about the shooting of Jacob Blake, especially given like how it was done, kids in the back seat, shot in the back? How did you feel when you first heard about that shooting?
To be honest with you, I've almost become numb in a way.
Wow.
I've found a way to, you know, of course, keep up with the news, but not get too wrapped up in it on a daily basis because it ruins my mood. Just like you said, I mean, I lead a team of people every single day, and unfortunately, as a Black man, I cannot get up there and say, this is really bothering me. I'm scared for my kids. I'm scared for myself. It's not something that you could really, you know, talk about, but it's, I mean, because even think about, you know, Rashad it's crazy. It's almost really difficult to talk about in a way.
I know you were getting ready to mention Rayshard Brooks.
Yeah.
And you know, it's interesting to me because one of the things that bothers me about Rayshard Brooks is how people want to put his incident in a separate box from George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery. And it really bothers me and because we've gotten to a point where there's a certain perspective that says certain killings are justified. And I'm just like, no, like none of these situations should have ended in murder.
At all.
What sorts of things have you heard from your team, let's say, from a corporate setting, a workplace setting, in response to these situations? And how have you responded? How have you been able to respond to it?
So originally, I was, you know, a little taken aback, I guess, for lack of better words, because I was kind of stuck between a rock and a hard spot. You know, the organization I was working at, that I am working for, didn't necessarily, you know, bring it to the forefront, right as it happened. You know, I'm talking about the Monday after George Floyd. So I was kind of stuck between a rock and a hard spot, being the leader of people and actually having some minorities, especially a good deal of minorities on my team. You know, I felt the pressure to be the spokesperson and really kind of bring it up. But of course, having the pressures of working for such a big company, you know, you kind of, you know, as a manager, you have to kind of take the steps. I was happy that, you know, they kind of reached the conversation and opened it up a little bit. So I was able to finally talk to my team, but
you know, I kind of approached it as from a holistic standpoint. I know I have a bunch of people from different backgrounds, you know, and different cultures and even different age ranges. And I broke it down to the simple fact, nobody should hate anybody. You know, and I'm just saying that on my team, this is not an all lives matter pitch by any means.
Right.
But it is, you know, bringing it from a corporate standpoint is I had to kind of, you know, lay the line and lay the groundwork and say, look, we're just not going to discriminate on each other. If you guys have any issues, you know, please bring it up to me, but nobody is going to discriminate on anybody. We spend more time here in a proverbial office than we do at home. So we're going to make sure that, you know, we stay upbeat and we take care of each other and treat each other as human beings. It's almost sad in 2020 you have to have that conversation, but
we're all having it. And something that I'm interested in hearing you talk about is this weight that's on us as Black men and as Black leaders to, for lack of a better term, sometimes muzzle or water down our real feelings to be effective in a corporate environment. And really where I want to go with it is, do you feel that pressure? Do you feel as if you can really express truthfully what you're thinking and feeling? And if you don't, how much do you feel you sometimes have to rein in or temper what you feel and what you say?
I absolutely know I can't. and I definitely feel that I can't fully express, you know, how I truly feel. And I believe it's, you know, it's how society has placed us as, you know, as Black men. We know that we can't necessarily afford to make the mistakes that others do.
Right.
And it's unfortunate, you know. I mean, yes, you know, we've gotten to these high positions and, you know, we've worked very hard to get these high positions, so we cannot make the same mistakes as others.
Right.
So I feel that it's because of that, I know that I cannot necessarily go in front of my team and speak my mind. Not that I'm going to say, I'm not going to spew hatred, but it's in the back of my mind, it's almost bringing it too much to the forefront. Like, yes, it's there, but it's at a, you know, comfortable level, like where they sit. And it's unfortunate, you know, but I definitely do feel that as a Black leader, that I can't necessarily go in front of my team and really express the frustrations and share the tears that I've had.
Right.
And the fears that I have, you know, having two black boys, you know, going to make men in this society.
And I definitely want to ask you about that aspect of it as well. Like, well, one of the things I asked my executive coach in the last segment was about conversations he's had with his kids. And, you know, he's a fairly older gentleman. His kids are fairly older, but I know you have young boys, correct?
Yes, 10 and 8.
Would you mind sharing with us a little bit of the conversations you have had with them since all of this has happened, and vice versa? What sort of reactions have they given and conversations shared with you based off how they view what's happening?
You know, and I appreciate you asking. The reason why is this is something that you can't explain to other families that are not necessarily going through the same, you know, fear that we are. You can't explain having to explain to a 10 and 8 year old that person with the badge that you look up to and actually want to be when you grow up actually killed somebody on TV because they look like you. So the conversations we've had in our household are two conversations. You know, of course, my wife and I, you know, we've talked about it and we've agreed upon what we're sharing, but we've had two conversations. My kids have seen the George Floyd video, have seen, you know, the news. Like, I don't mind when they sit next to me when I watch the news.
Wow.
Yeah, we have true, honest, open conversations. And it's not to put fear in them, and it's definitely not to spew hate, because, you know, we tell them that there's, you know, there's good people and there's bad people out there.
How do you think that conversation has been received by them? Like, do you see that they're still optimistic? Do you see them becoming reserved, or is it really too early to tell?
Kids are resilient.
Yeah.
I stand behind it that it's going to be our kids' generation that are going to change everything. Because, you know, what they're asking, they ask the right questions. Well, what did he do wrong? Well, why? Why? It just doesn't make sense. And I stand behind that because this, the kids' generation, what they're seeing now, is just seeing the older generation who you know, have had racist past and believe that, you know, this is the right way to handle our people. And then we have us who are standing behind saying, look, we're not doing anything wrong. We just want a fair chance. We just want equality.
Right.
And the kids are looking at both as like, well, what's wrong with that? You know?
Right.
Yeah, like, the very, like my friends, like it's just, yeah, why can't we all be friends? So it's one of those, I definitely feel that it's going to be that generation that's going to change things. But I mean, to answer your question, I mean, they ask questions, but I feel like they ask the right questions.
Right.
You know, really trying to get to the bottom of it and understand, like, why is it really happening? The toughest part is trying to answer that exact question.
And that's a profound statement and really a profound thought, because one of the things that I've personally seen from the young generation, you know, I listen to the music. I don't understand what's going on. That's how I know I've gotten old. A lot of what they like, how they speak, I find myself at that place that I was 20 years ago where like, it's like, what are you guys talking about? Like, that doesn't even make sense. But then situations like this happen and you realize just how culturally aware they are and how unafraid they are. They speak their mind. They'll take action. They rally together. They have a different way of communicating than we're used to, but it's effective for their generation.
Yeah, and I mean, we even were taking our kids on the, we had a march in our local city, and we took our kids to that march. And that march was actually organized by the local high school. The kids at the high school organized that march and had the whole city there. The mayor was there. The police escorted, right, walking right down the middle of the street. And it'd be those kids that changed this, you know, take it to the next level.
Let's take a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back and jump into part two of this special conversation I've been having with my friend Star. So keep it tuned here. It's the It's Your World podcast here on Team Media.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the It's Your World podcast here on Team Media. So let me pivot a little bit, but still kind of thinking about the kids. They've already have been exposed to much more than I'm sure as a parent you wish they were. But, you know, social media being what it is, they have any sort of friends or social connections, it's going to get talked about even at a young age. So it's hard to kind of safeguard your kids against what's happening in the world just because it's all over the place. There's more access to information. But what are some things that you still worry about? I mean, given as bad as it's been, given everything going on, as a relatively young parent, like what keeps you up at night when you think about the state of the world and how it will sort of play out in your kids and their generation?
It does keep me up a lot, but it's trying to figure out how to teach them what's going on, but also not develop hate.
How does one do that, though?
How? Exactly. There's no book on there. You know, it just all of a sudden, you know, deaths that are happening just happen to be with people with badges. How do I not say that all people with badges are bad? And how do I convince rational children who think rationally, like educated and highly educated kids do, how do I teach them not to do that? You know? I wish I could say, well, you know, watch a different channel. Well, don't go outside.
There are a lot of channels that would probably tell them, you know, a different narrative, like that mm-hmm. will say it's all George and Brianna and Ahmad's fault. And it has to at least be so much to think about as a parent.
It does. But it really is just, I mean, honestly, and then also with the age, of course, we don't set up a bar to them, and we try to still keep their, you know, them as kids, you know, so we still do have the Fortnite and everything else, and try to still keep them a release, but, you know, keeping them away from reality is not something that we are privileged enough to do.
Right. And this is some place I was going with my counselor again in the last segment. One of the things he shared was pretty much just that, you know, for better or worse, this is a part of our culture and life. Like, it's going to happen again. And we need to already begin thinking about, you know, how are we going to respond? How are we going to persist? How are we not going to lose our minds? Because we still have to function. We still have to go to work. We still have to raise families. We still have to maintain relationships. And we live in a world with thousands of other cultures and ideas and perspectives. So as you think about your own life, like, what are some things that have worked for you? And to keep it real 100, where are some places that you find you still struggle in trying to make sense and get to a place of peace in light of everything going on?
To be honest with you, the one place I feel I struggle with this, everything, is speaking on it enough. I envy my wife a little bit. You know, she, if you follow her on social media, she's always talking about this, but she hasn't let that channel die.
Wow.
So for me, that's kind of where I struggle. Is trying to find that fine line, but I also know that on the flip side of that fine line, I work for a very big company, you know, and it could be misconstrued some sort of way, which is unfortunate. So I know that in a way, there's that what you were talking about earlier, that I'm silent, you know, and it's not my company saying that, and they have not come out and said that at all. But it's the perception as a black male.
Because you know there's a spotlight on you, even if it's not announced.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Even if it's not announced, I know all eyes are on me.
I'll let you get back to what's helping you in a second, but I want to expound on that a little bit. When you think about what you really want to say, and I'm not going to ask you because that's that ain't nothing but trouble. But in your own mind, when you dissect what you really want to say, is it more about the strength of the idea that you want to put out there, or is it the reaction you think your thought would garner if you said it?
It's the reaction and the perception.
Okay.
Because what I really want to say is I'm not spewing hate. I just want people to really understand. I want people to really look at the research and look how, you know, what has been involved behind the oppression.
Mm.
You know, because people, you know, I've seen posts on Facebook, people, you know, you could look at me for an example, you know, in my position. And I would look foolish saying, oh, oppression, oppression, oppression. But that's why I'm not the cop.
Right.
You know, I have tints on all my vehicles, and every single time I'm pulled over, I still turn on the lights inside, roll down the windows to make sure that I'm 100% visible.
Wow.
I'm not doing anything illegal.
Wow.
That's what I would like to really explain, that it's not a visible oppression that we're talking about, but it's there. It's yeah.
What do you think keeps people from really grasping that? Like, why do you think it's not enough to just share that perspective and be understood?
Because of the perception. The perception is we are coming for what's quote unquote theirs.
Mm.
And some people, this is my assumption from Facebook posts and seeing people's reactions to this movement, this negative reaction to this movement, is in a way they feel like this movement is to come and to replace them. Not to have equal rights and hopefully, you know, sit next to them. It's to replace them and replace exactly what they've had.
That's deep.
Yeah.
And it's true, because mm-hmm. there, you do feel or perceive from the narrative, there's this sense that some people feel like they're losing control, or they're losing something.
Understanding.
Yeah.
And it comes from guilt, because if you did something, if you did somebody wrong, wouldn't you expect them to tell you? Wouldn't you expect them to, you know, to come in and try to get some sort of, you know, retaliation, some sort of vengeance, you know? And I think that's where the grasp is coming, because this is not even for most of us. This is not actually for all of us. I'm going to try to explain myself. This is not a applied to get violent. It's just people are fed up.
Right. So I want to go back to my question from a moment ago. You answered, you know, where you struggle. What would you say is kind of helping you remain optimistic, or keeps you optimistic? I mean, earlier you said, you know, you have a lot of hope in the young generation, but for you yourself, like, what keeps you going? What keeps you focused in a time like this?
I was at the original protest in Sacramento right after George Floyd.
Okay.
I was here in my local city for the protest, and the other 90% of the Facebook posts that I see are people that don't look like me that are fed up as well. There's a lot more good people in this than there are bad, unfortunately.
Wow.
It's just that the bad people are the ones getting the spotlight. And there's a lot of allies. There's a lot of people that are fed up, and there's a lot of people who actually understand the movement.
And that's interesting. So really having that diverse array of people that you can look to is really helping you see that more people care than you may otherwise realize.
Yeah. Like there's people that legitimately care. Like even, you know, sometimes the minimal times that we do go out, there are, you could kind of tell people who kind of go out of the way to say hi, or, you know, just they're extra polite, and it's just, you know, a warm feeling. It's not fake by any means, but it's people are noticing, and they're trying to I think they're really taking a step forward of realizing that, okay, maybe their previous actions were wrong.
Right.
Maybe I need to take a look at myself.
Right. As a matter of full disclosure, you know that I think that you're a whole lot more hopeful than I am.
Yeah.
I told you the other night, I have no faith in America to do the right thing, and I'm hoping that I'm wrong. I really do hope that I'm wrong, because I want to see the work that has really started even before the civil rights movement up to the present day culminate into something meaningful. More than words and holidays, like a real changing of the heart. Of humanity. But as warm and fuzzy as that sentence is, I have little hope that it will come to pass. But I want to be mindful for a minute, because there's another Black man listening to this show right now, looking for that hope star. And what would you say to a brother, whether you knew him or not, that came to you and said, "Look, yo, I'm hurting right now. It's a lot, Kobe. It's a lot. Black Panther, it's a lot. Coronavirus, it's a lot. Shooting us in the street and not caring is a lot." What would you say to another brother to kind of help him be encouraged and keep his head up in a time like this?
Well, first and foremost, find somebody to talk to about it. Find somebody to talk to. It's a lot that's going on. It's a lot. Find somebody you can openly talk to about it. And that's the first and foremost, because it's just going to boil inside if you don't. But as far as for the optimism, I mean, it comes from within. For me, my optimism comes from, if it doesn't happen, what's the ladder? I mean, they're killing us now.
Right.
So I feel like that there is no other option but optimism.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, I would say definitely talk to somebody. And go out there in the streets. I mean, talk to somebody. But one more thing, too, specifically to that Black male. When you see another Black brother, say hi. No more mean mug. We are not competition against each other anymore.
I'm so glad you said that, Star.
That's it. Say hi, man. Look up. Give the nod, man. You know. We know.
Like real talk. We are not competition. I am not coming after anything you have.
And zero, and
you only thing of value I got is my wife, and I know she ain't going nowhere. She happy.
You feel me? So we're doing our part.
Yeah, I ain't worried about that. But we are brothers. We are not competition.
We are brothers at all. Like stop. We are not competition. Say hi. Just a net hot. A head nod.
Yep.
That's it. That's one of the biggest things. We are only going to get through this if we unify. And that's the scariest part about it. Yep. Because we have, as a culture, since the first shit came, we have been divide and conquer has been the number one rule.
Yep.
So that's why what people really don't understand, I mean, you can get deeper into it, is we have been bred that way, to fear each other, to compete against each other, to, you know, it's ingrained in us, and it's time for us to stop.
And I think that's the proper way to end this segment. But yes, I want to reiterate before we close, if you're listening, reach out to me. Like, if you are someone and you don't have a social circle where you feel like you could be heard and understood, I'll leave my information at the end of the show. But by all means, reach out. This is a moment where you don't have to keep what you feel to yourself. And it's probably more healthy if you don't. But there are spaces where you can be heard and can be understood. And I invite every Black man, every brother listening to me right now, like, if you don't have anyone to connect to, you can connect to me. But let's talk.
Say hi.
Yeah. And just say hi. It's the simplest thing in the world. You ain't even got to be like overthinking. It's like, what's up? And then that's it.
That's it. We know what it means.
Yep.
That's a whole conversation.
That's our language.
Whole conversation. That's it.
That's our language.
Whole conversation. Exactly.
So Star, again, I thank you for giving me 30 minutes of your time, brother. I know how busy you are. So
I meant exactly what I said, man. Anything I could do to support what you're trying to do, I'm here for it.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, you just let me know. I'm here.
Appreciate it. All right, everyone. We're going to take a quick break and come back. This is the It's Your World podcast here on Team Media.
America, your children have an amazing superpower. That's right. They can help save lives by simply washing their hands. Just 20 seconds of thorough hand washing after they've coughed or sneezed or been outside can help fight against the dastardly spread of germs. Armed with only soap and water and hands, your superhero can protect you, your family, and everyone out there in America land. Amazing! Find out more at coronavirus.gov. A message from the CDC and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the US Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt US Kids, and the Ad Council.
Well, everyone, that's going to do it for this very special edition of the It's Your World podcast. Again, big shout out to my executive coach, Mr. Bill Nicholson, and my friend Star Shahuri for coming on. And hopefully you brothers listening have been edified. And if nothing else, that you can feel a little bit more understood. As I said during the broadcast, if you are someone who doesn't have anyone to talk to, you have no one to go to feel heard and understood, you know, please feel free to hit me up, dtj@theteam.media. You can leave messages wherever this podcast is posted. They'll be routed to us. My executive coach is available on LinkedIn, again, at Bill Nicholson, NICHOLSON. I just want to make sure every brother in America is connected to another brother and has a space, a safe space, to be heard and understood. It's a lot. And no one has to play tough or conversely be ignorant to the fact of everything that's going on. Like, it's a lot, and you don't have to go through it by yourself. We're here to listen. There's a place for you to be understood. So please not take it. Please don't be prideful, I would say, and reach out. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with an all new episode. I know this one is airing over the Labor Day holiday. Hopefully you guys are staying safe. Those of you in the West Coast, hopefully you're staying cool. Those of you in the East Coast, hopefully you're chilling. But either way, stay safe, everyone. And until next time, take care of yourselves and each other. Peace.